you're rolling with rockin' Ricky Rialto, the voice of Kingston Falls, USA.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. Fresh from the airport, and boy, are my arms tired.
Oh, are you picking someone up?
Yeah, my mom just got back from Ohio.
Oh, well, that's good.
It's very, the airport is very busy this evening.
Uh-huh. It was also busy at the airport I was at last evening. I was waiting 30 minutes for a Lyft to show up to pick me up from the curb.
Oh, you and your rideshare gig economy nonsense.
Yeah, I know. Well, see, I should have just got a taxi cab, but I didn't have any cash, but I didn't realize that until after I walked past all of the ATMs inside of the terminal.
Well, you don't want to spend $350 in fees on an ATM just to ride in a horrible cab anyway.
Well, it wouldn't have been because the bank that operates that ATM is actually my bank. So.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Could have driven on a luxury cab experience. I don't know. I didn't even see
that. No, just order a Lyft and then play on your phone. Like, no, I didn't feel like going home right away anyway.
Yeah, well, I didn't see what the taxi line was like because they've separated them. So you actually get into your rideshare on the departures level of LAX now, and then you get your taxis still on the departure floor.
Mm. So. You think they did that to make the taxi guys less visible, or like the Lyft guys don't like aggravate the taxi guys because they can't see them?
Well, I think they did that because they are dropping people off usually when they're at the airport. So then that means they pick them up there rather than going down to the departure level.
Oh, see, that's smart. That makes sense. I should have gone that way instead.
It's okay. It's just the inner workings of Los Angeles International Airport. Who cares?
Transportation is a very difficult topic.
Who doesn't love transportation and infrastructure? Yeah, everyone. Enough of that. Do you know what season it is now, Dan?
It's as of like a week ago, if you're most of the people in my neighborhood, it's already Christmas.
Yep.
These people are ridiculous. There's giant inflatable snowmen and penguins and crazy star shooters all over the friggin' place. Like, they were up before Thanksgiving, which is not allowed in my book. But given that it is officially after Thanksgiving, it is apparently officially Christmas.
Yes, and when this episode comes out, it will be Christmas.
Well, it'll be December.
Well, yeah, but I mean Christmas season.
Christmas, sure.
The reason for the season.
Currently 72.7 degrees in my office here, 32% humidity.
Ah, 72.5 in my living room. So.
Oh, see, it was 72.5 here. Just dropped back down to 72.5. As you say, before I closed the door to this office, it was the same.
Oh.
So I went down back to 72.5. My humidity went up to 34%.
Oh, well, I'm at 42% humidity.
Mm.
So we're temp buddies, but we're not humidity pals. So
no, yeah. Maiko would approve of your humidity more than he would of mine. But
what would be temp twins and humidity hombres? So there we go.
we're fraternal humidities and identical temperatures.
Yes.
Is that how that works?
Uh huh. Very few degrees separate us. So
unlike Kevin Bacon. Who's always 7 degrees away from everything.
Yeah, except I didn't look up any of the Bacon numbers for the people in the cast of Gremlins, a movie.
I mean, Howie Mandel's probably got to be really close to him, right?
I would assume so. Howie Mandel seems like he gets uncomfortably close to lots of people, but like in a I'm not touching you kind of a way. So that's probably it.
Mm. Mm. This movie, for those who haven't fully sussed this out, we're talking about Gremlins. We watched Gremlins today, and
they haven't sussed it out from the title of the episode. And the page.
It's going to be a very bad title, I assume, based on all the things we're going to say. This movie worries me for one particular reason. So I was halfway through watching it, and I was like, oh no, Are all of the mid-80s movies with, like, Muppety, Puppety characters this bad? Because I don't want to, like, now I don't, I'm afraid to go watch E.T. if it's this, if it has any sort of this feeling. Because this movie is horrifying. This movie is horrifying is the only way I could describe it.
It is interesting because it is a horror comedy. So it has a very different role to play than E.T.
Yeah, but like, but, disregarding all of the incredibly all over the map tone stuff and just the completely inappropriate things that happen in this movie, like, just watching this is like, oh my God, this is cheesy. And maybe it's the first part of this movie that's really getting to me, because for the first, 20 minutes, like the whole first act and into the second act, you're like, these characters are idiots and these actors are bad. And what is happening here? Like, this is all of the bad parts of Home Alone, like, cobbled together with dumb characters that don't understand how to, like, operate in a real world. And then all of a sudden, like, the tone, like, the score shifts and suddenly it's a slasher movie and she's stabbing gremlins and throwing them in microwaves, and like the teacher gets stabbed with a hypodermic needle and I think he's dead under his desk. It's like, what is happening here?
Yeah, it's interesting you should mention Home Alone, because Gremlins started as a spec script that Christopher Columbus wrote. The Christopher Columbus who did the Home Alone movies and some of the Harry Potter movies, not the one who sailed the ocean blue, and he didn't actually intend for this to be a movie that was made, and also on top of that, so apparently Steven Spielberg caught the spec script and actually wanted to make it. He thought it was great. He didn't want to make it himself, but this is when he was starting to get into the period where he was a producer on things. And he wanted to get Joe Dante based on his work on The Howling. And he thought that Joe Dante could balance horror and comedy elements. And in the revisions before they filmed it, they made it less dark and awful than it actually wound up being, which is
they took the blood and gore and like pushed it slightly out of the frame is about all they did.
Well, there were a couple other things, like the mother was supposed to die originally. The stripe gremlin was supposed to be Gizmo. There wasn't a stripe that was going to be there before. And so Spielberg had insisted that none of the kids who were going to go watch this movie would want to see cute little Gizmo be evil. So they wanted to have him be unchanged through the process of the film and still be cute little Gizmo at the end. And then there's other stuff like Joe Dante apparently argued to keep in the story about the father dying dressed as Santa Claus.
What the hell was that? That was so messed up.
It was very messed up. This is an incredibly messed up movie. And I would say that I might have warned you in advance had I known that you didn't know that it was
a
messed up movie.
I've seen this movie before. I've seen this movie, but I think it's just been washed away with years of like marketing nonsense and Gizmo plushy toys at stores and probably like buried in my memory behind like Teddy Ruxpins and crap. But like, you know, I know in my brain that like, oh, there's your Gizmo gremlin, and don't feed him after midnight or get him wet, because if he gets wet, he multiplies. And if you feed him after midnight, I was a little unclear in my memory as to what happens if you feed him after midnight. And then I knew that there were the bad gremlins and they were going to like cause trouble and stuff. But then, like, okay, so when I'm watching this, I'm trying to go like, okay, Chris Columbus and Joe Dante, like, I'm trying to figure out who did what and why and how in this movie. But I swear, if I watched this movie and I didn't know anything about Joe Dante, I would think he was legit bipolar, because there are scenes that are just like straight up like out of your Disney sort of like, oh, la la la, this is going to be a silly Disney movie with a fuzzy little alien thing. And then it just like, just at the drop of a hat, the next scene, like, it's all dark and there's no lights in the house and she's walking around and there's glint coming off of the knives she's carrying as she slowly stalks from room to room to kill these animals. It's like, what in God's name is happening here? And then it swings back into like Roger Rabbit, where it's like you've got all these friggin' gremlin things at a bar and they're like, oh, we're playing pool and we're causing trouble. And it's like, hang on. First of all, these aliens were born yesterday and suddenly they know, like, they know all of these like cultural things to parody, like they're dressing a certain way and they're smoking and drinking, and like these are the things. Like, is this why they're bad because they're just like, they have the genes to be bad people or something. Like, why are they drinking and smoking and like setting things on fire? And it makes no sense. But then,
well, but
it doesn't matter. That it doesn't make any sense because they're all just like, it's like an evil Muppet party in a bar.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And they also have a surprising amount of electrical engineering knowledge that you might not expect.
Oh, sure, you just rub two wires together and you get green lights going both directions and you break the fourth wall and laugh as cars crash into each other.
Yeah.
But it's so weird and it goes on for so long and then I don't know why any of these things are happening. And all of the people, like Phoebe Cates is still in the bar, like trying to like work the bar, like when all of these gremlins are being horrible and running around, she's like trying to light cigarettes for them and like pour drinks for them. And it's like, why are you not running away from all of these horrible things?
Well, with that scene, it's like, you know, I could understand if she's cornered and trapped at the bar and she can't escape. But then it raises the question of how did she find herself cornered and trapped at the bar serving? It's not like they slowly transitioned the patrons of the bar into being, you know, gremlins over time. Like, the gremlins got in there at some point and overran the bar. And how would she know to serve them rather than just flee? So I don't understand that. Also, everyone in this movie is 99% less concerned than they should be about everything.
Right. And it's because the gremlins oscillate between like being like, oh, you put shaving cream on the toilet seat, to like, no, he's literally going to stab you in the face with a knife. He's firing a pistol at you 1 second, and then it's like, oh, he rolled a bowling ball into some beer bottles on the pool table and there's broken glass, like, you shouldn't do that, you troublemaker. And then like literally she turns around and one of them tries to shoot her in the face.
Yeah, well, and also there is a gremlin who shoots another gremlin because he's moving in on his lady, I guess, question mark. That's in that bar montage. But that's one of those things about this movie where it's trying to just show you that these are just these anarchic, chaotic, awful things that exist just to cause mayhem and to indulge in every impulse that they have at the moment. So it can vary from very mild impulses, like I'm going to rip out this phone cord, to I'm going to eat someone and like slash them up.
You know how I know this is a spec script, aside from all of those things, is the way they tried to like first act retcon the whole name thing with like the drunk guy driving a tractor, like, ah, these foreign cars, they got gremlins in the motor. It's like, really?
Yeah,
you had to name check the movie like that ahead of time. So it was like, oh, see how we planted that word there? It's a gremlin. Then later, he's going to be like, oh, there's an actual gremlin in my tractor. And then the gremlin drives the tractor through his house. And it, you know, based on the way it's shot, it looks like they ran him and his wife over and killed them with a tractor.
It does appear to be the case.
Like, what in the hell?
Yeah, the degree of casual murder that's in this film is a little higher than you might expect. Like, even the horrible lady who sort of runs the town.
Oh God, that's such a weird intro too. Like, there's this horrible lady who's in charge of the town because she's the rich lady with furs. But like, I thought, like, does she own the bank or run the bank? But no, she's just like really important there. And then she yells at the one guy from Pretty in Pink, or not Pretty in Pink, the other one.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
No, the other one with Molly Ringwald in it.
Okay.
He's the dad.
16 Candles.
The grandpa from 16 Candles. Okay. He's the bank guy there. And then you got Judge Reinhold there for some reason talking about how he's going to be a millionaire by the time he's 30. Like, what are these things? Why are all of these things here in the beginning of this movie? And it's just like, oh, look how downtrodden poor what's his name is. Hoyt, is that this kid's name?
No. Billy is the name of the kid. Hoyt.
Oh, Billy.
Hoyt Hexton is the guy who plays his dad.
Oh, Randall. Yeah, that's the older fella. Yeah, Billy. Because of course, because at the end there, what's his name? Gizmo learns to say Billy.
Mm.
But like this whole setup of like you have no idea which direction they're leading you. I mean, well, first of all, like I was like incredibly distracted by Universal Studios and the Back to the Future set there. Like,
look a little familiar.
There's the clock tower. Doc Brown is going to slide down a wire and like crash into the Christmas trees in the center of the little town square.
Yeah, and the Chinatown that you see at the beginning of the film is the Warner Brothers backlot.
By the way, I would like to state for the record that the Chinatown scene is incredibly ping pong and does not hold up.
It is. Remember how you were talking about how you didn't remember things about this movie? Yeah. When I was watching that, I was just like, how is this the opening scene? Have I never seen this before?
it's the ping pongiest of ping pong 80s scenes. Like, you've got the old guy with the one white eye and the long beard and like smoking the long opium pipe thing. Like, what are you doing?
This is so incredibly racist. And it's also, how should I say this? Because basically the mechanic is that there is a person from the East who has this mystical thing, and then some white guy takes it and ruins everything.
I need a birthday present for my kid, and I'm gonna walk around. Well, yeah, and then like the introduction, like I could have sworn the dad character was just like some throwaway first scene guy, because he's just like some schmo who comes into this place and he's trying to sell some stupid dingus that he made that helps you brush your teeth in an airport or some crap. I'm like, so this is the guy that's going to be like murdered, and then we, you know, fade up 4 years later on a different part of the country. And like, no, this is the dad. I completely forgot about the whole like weird invention thing, and then it gets all kind of like creepy suburban Tim Burton-y kind of thing. Like, why is this a thing? And then the scene where Billy puts the orange into the thing, like he's laughing before the orange juice even hits him in the face too. So it's like, oh my god, like why is this here?
Yeah. So is the mother when she's making the coffee.
It's like, dad, you suck as an inventor. Go get a job at a factory or something. This is still the 80s. You can go like work on an assembly line somewhere.
Well, that was apparently part of the problem, is that Billy is supporting his family by having his job at the bank. And apparently the family owes money to Mrs. Deagle, like many other families in this town. I'm not sure how she came to be the person pulling those strings necessarily, because it doesn't seem like she's the friendly loan person kind of type. I'm not sure how that initial interaction occurs.
I don't know how banks worked in the 80s, but maybe it's because she had so much money in there that all of the loans that came out of the bank were underwritten by her personally.
I'm not sure. I mean, she very well may have had some influence on the bank in an actual capacity, like as some sort of board member or something. No, it's not really explored, nor do I really care to see a movie about that. But
she's just this overdeveloped, horrible person that gets thrown out of a window and dies in a snowbank, apparently.
Yeah. Like I said, casual murder.
But it's hilarious too, because the gremlin laughs because he hotwires the chair and I don't know, overclocks it or something. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, well, Dan, it's a movie where a little tiny furry ball turns into little reptile things.
Their electrical acuity would make a little bit more sense if one of them was somehow electrically digitized and he was one with the electricity.
You're getting ahead of yourself.
Are you gonna make me watch that movie
someday? But not,
does it have to be this year? I hope it doesn't.
No, not this calendar year. So anyway. Because it's not a Christmas movie, but anyway, the important thing here is that they have this bizarre tension between being an 80s family film at some points with cheesy stuff in it, and it seems the movie itself seems aware of how cheesy some of these mechanisms are. But it almost seems to embrace
them. When does it seem aware of it?
Just by how ridiculous the character of Mrs. Deagle is. Like I think that she's in there on purpose to poke fun at this sort of shrill older lady who bosses everybody around. Which has been depicted in other things, like, you know, Bewitched or etc. stuff. Instead what you wind up with is sort of like weird tone shifts, like you had pointed out, because it doesn't necessarily, like, Mrs. Deagle has nothing to do with the story of this film.
No, she just gets killed by a gremlin and everything. Maybe they thought it would be, like, a satisfying, like, oh, look how she gets killed in the end there. Isn't that funny? Like, you don't want to kill the good guys, but you would need somebody to kill.
Yeah, but the Futtermans, like, why do you want something bad to happen to them necessarily?
Was the Futterman the tractor guy?
Yeah.
See, and I thought they were setting him up to be like the hero of the movie too, because he's like, ah, those gremlins, you got to be on the lookout for those gremlins, and I drive a tractor and stuff. Like, I was expecting him to like run him down in the road in his big American-made tractor or something.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of movies do that sort of thing.
It's like an Independence Day, like the drunken uncle plane captain pilot person is the one who saves the day, like that kind of thing.
Or I'd say another Joe Dante property, The Burbs.
God, see, The Burbs is so much better than this movie.
Disagree.
No, The Burbs is way better. The Burbs has Tom Hanks, too, so...
Yeah, but Tom Hanks is also erratic and makes no sense in that movie.
All right,
but...
he can at least do more than Mr. Billy Peltzer, who just sort of like stands there and stares into the camera and then has one scene where he awkwardly kisses a girl and then like runs away. I can't even call it a love story. The whole thing between him and Phoebe Cates is so just beyond contrived and unnecessary. It doesn't even work. Like, I'm going to kiss you now, and suddenly we're in a relationship.
Would you believe that they were cast, that they cast Zach Galligan as Billy because of the chemistry on set between Zach and Phoebe Cates when they were doing their auditions?
Can I say shit now?
I gotta bleep it.
No, like, there's no chemistry. Like, first of all, you can tell there's no chemistry because, like, it's a wide shot, and then he leans in to kiss her, and they cut to a close-up, and he kisses, and then it cuts right back to a wide shot. So it's like, okay, clearly you guys had to do that a couple of times because it didn't work. And even the one that's on camera is, like, you expected him to pull back and Phoebe Cates to go, like, what was that? That was gross. Stop that.
Well, I mean... I like their sort of, you know, schoolyard, you know, romantic stuff at the beginning of the film a little bit. The back and
forth.
Right
up into the point where she's like, my dad died dressed as Santa and got stuck in the fireplace and his body was rotting for days before we found him.
That was a bit of a shift. But
because they're all like, what do you mean you hate Christmas? How come you hate Christmas? And it's like, oh, you know, you expect something bad to have happened, or like she doesn't like it because, like, I don't know, she had a bad Christmas, her dad left her or something. But
she,
like,
she doesn't even say she doesn't like Christmas as much as she doesn't celebrate Christmas. And then he's offended and he's like, what are you, Hindu? And it's like, what? Wait, what?
First of all,
what did that have to do with anything?
How dare you? B.
Yes.
My father died and was rotting in a fireplace for days, dressed as Santa Claus. Like, I mean, it's amazing she's even able to go outside during December.
Yes.
I would just, like, I would have such horrible PTSD if I was her. Like, the sight of that crushed red velvet suit would just,
Yeah. Could you imagine just, like, the one guy who dresses up as Santa and gets mauled by the gremlins later on?
He does Santa every year. What's he doing now? And then and then you got the drunk cops, they're drunk on what, like homemade eggnog or whatever they're doing there. And then, like, they go driving around. Not only are they drunk and driving, they're cowardly, too. And they're like, I want to leave. I want to go away. And then the gremlin apparently knows how the mechanics of automobiles cuts the brake line. So they flip over and die in their cop car.
Yeah. And you get the veteran character actor, Jonathan Banks, in there as the deputy.
Yeah, much less menacing in this movie than Beverly Hills Cop, whichever one of those ones he was in. Two?
Yes. Let's just very briefly describe that this movie starts off with that horribly racist scene where he gets the thing. You know, there are many parallels that you can draw to lots of other movies, like Hellraiser, for example. Where somebody gets a thing they shouldn't have, and it's from the mysterious Far East, and he brings it back to his family, gives it to his his kid. His kid already has a dog, so I don't know why he was thinking double pets, but he did. And it's a pet that you can't feed after midnight, and you can't get wet, and you have to keep away from bright light, especially sunlight, which will destroy them. And so he very casually hands this to his teenager, who I don't know fully understands and accepts the burden that's been placed upon him, because as we go through some of Billy's life, and he goes into the other people that he knows in his life, including a very young Corey Feldman as Pete Fontaine, who dresses up as a Christmas tree to deliver Christmas trees because his dad makes him do it.
Could his character be worse in this movie?
I don't know what his character does.
Well, he's there for the water being spilled and then, like, the other gremlins coming out. And apparently he's so bored by the idea of water making a gremlin multiply that he just goes and starts reading comic books on the bed. And he's like, yeah, whatever, bro. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
like,
that's what I mean by 99% less concerned than they should be.
Not even less concerned. Like, your fascination level lies more in the comic book than it does with an animal that multiplies with having water poured on it. But going back to this whole, like, the white man buying the thing that wasn't for sale because he had more money than the other folks who needed it, the way this comes back around in the end is so messed up. Like, this whole thing was a parable about how they're not ready for the responsibility, and they ruined it, like, all of nature's gifts or something. Like, I absolutely did not remember that dude just shows up at the end and takes Gizmo away again.
Yeah, well, and you really shouldn't be surprised, because...
And the dad is there, he's like, Billy's like, but he's taking my Gizmo, and the dad's just like, calm down, Billy, I wasn't supposed to buy this thing in the first place, like, I'm sorry, like, I'm not even gonna fight on your behalf for this.
He doesn't even ask for his $200 back.
Well, yeah, the guy already threw it down on the couch, like, as soon as he walked in.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
He's like, more, you know, paid or bought, like, more, yeah, I wouldn't call it that, and he throws it down on the couch, but he's like...
And then Gizmo shouts, moolah.
Yeah, and then he's like, but he takes it back, like, this whole thing was a parable about how they're, like, not responsible enough to take care of nature or something. Like, what? We were supposed to learn a lesson from this? Like, no.
But the lesson is, you can always ignite gasoline in a movie theater, apparently.
God. It would have been better if, like, the screen caught on fire and they locked the doors, and then Phoebe Cates recorded her face that was projecting on the smoke over top of all of the gremlins screaming.
Do you think that inspired Quentin Tarantino?
I would have to say yes. Can I say yes to that? Because the burning down of the gremlins, I especially love how, like, again, this is a super low budget movie, like, they run out of the building and there's, like, a small explosion, and then it, like, cuts to inside and there's just gremlins running around on fire, and then it cuts to the other side of the building and there's another small explosion. It's like, you guys had very little budget on this. Also, like,
11 million. That's it.
11 million. They tried to do a Jaws thing too, where, like, the first half of the movie, everything happens outside of the frame. And after, like, the first, like, 3 minute long tracking move that only moves, like, 3 feet, where you're like, okay, I get what you're doing. You're trying to be mysterious, but you just, I can tell you're not showing it to me because you literally don't have, like, the puppets that can go from, like, fully articulated to standing up and moving. Like, so you can see where their eye line is, like, looking where the puppet should be, and they set it down, like, below the table because the other version of the puppet is already sitting on the table, and then the camera pulls back out to reveal a different version of the puppet. It's like, oh God, I can see all of the seams in your movie here, guys.
Yeah, and, you know, there's some camera shadows and stuff, but it was the style of the time. I know that you roll your eyes and grimace at the puppeteering, but I think it's pretty remarkable considering it's 1984. Just the scope of the number of puppets that have to be operating simultaneously in some scenes.
Yeah, but then, like, I look at it and I'm like, the whole reason that bar scene is so friggin' long is because they're like, well, we built all these gremlins, and wouldn't it be funny if we had one doing this and one doing that? And, like, rather than letting the best idea win, they're like, let's just use all of these ideas and shoot them all, because let's get the most out of our money for these puppets. And they did.
It's you know, that's an issue more of editing, because I can understand why you'd want to shoot it, because you can't change your mind later.
Yeah, you can only set a gremlin on fire once or twice.
Yeah, so
it's ruined.
So do that and record it, and then you decide later, oh, you know what? There are 15 more jokes in here than we need, and some of them are not even jokes. So let's get rid of a couple of them, but they don't do that. And like you said, that's why that bar scene is so long. But there's other stuff in here where you are watching them plan out what they're going to be doing to get from scene to get from one spot in the scene to another spot in the scene. The amount of planning that needs to go into, oh, well, now we need to do the close-ups so that they can eat food because the tiny, tiny ones are not articulated enough in order to be able to shoot that.
You talk about like the extreme close-ups of the mouths with the chicken.
Yeah. Because they can't actually shoot that with the same ones that they're using on set there for the scale. So they have to actually go to giant chicken, insert it into the mouth of a enlarged mogwai, and in order to pull off those sorts of scenes. And it's not sort of the casual thing where you can be like, oh yeah, you know, we did a little of this, we did a little of that, we'll just see what comes together in post. Everybody will just like animate some monsters running around, maybe we'll split the plate and we'll use half of this other performance or something. No, that can't happen. So it all has to be planned out in advance and executed. And so if it's a little flabby, that's the fault of the editor. But I really think that there's it was important for them to shoot all this stuff, and that I'm pretty good with the amount of stuff they were able to get out of these puppets.
Sure. Yeah, they got a lot of stuff out of the puppets. Although I feel like there was one, I kind of want to rewatch it now. I feel like there was one split screen in that opening Chinatown scene where it's a shot of the dad and the old guy is just out of the frame to the left, but like some of his smoke from his pipe is like rising up in the corner, and I feel like it freezes for like a solid second and a half and then starts moving again.
Okay.
I thought I saw that, but I want to go back and look at it again. Anyway,
okay.
Visual effects of the time. yeah. I don't know. These are all special effects.
So contemptuous.
So like he keeps his scissors or something, pens in a jar full of water, and then Corey Feldman inadvertently spills that on.
It was paintbrushes.
Oh, right. He's very artistic, this young boy, because he draws comic books or something, right?
Yeah. And which we are introduced to by the Futterman character, talking about how he's going to read about him in the Funny Pages with Little Abner. Billy gets to point out that strip hasn't run. And we, as the audience, get to point out that we don't even understand that reference.
Oh yeah, time appropriate cultural references are hilarious, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh god. And then they spawn, and he puts them in a box because they're like less important than Gizmo, who I guess is in this particular metaphor is the upper 1% who gets to sleep in the bed while the rest of the middle class live in a box next to the bed.
Well, they do seem a little evil, although.
They seem mischievous a little bit, or they have like, I don't know, they really just have like suspicious smirks on their faces for a little while, right?
Yeah, they're just a little shifty. It's not entirely clear to me from this movie if when they get wet and multiply, if all of them are necessarily predisposed to being evil, or if it's mainly the result of one bad seed who sways everyone bad stuff.
I think Mohawk or whatever his name was,
Stripe,
was one out of six. He was a bad one, and then he multiplied himself, and it was copy of a copy, and then you know you get all multiplicity, and it gets sort of fuzzy, and then everyone's bad.
Well, that happens later. All those ones in the box were from.
I guess all the ones in the box do kind of attack the mom.
Yeah, and but it does seem to be Stripe who's the leader who organizes what they do to the dog. dangling him from the lights outside. It's not clear how they did that, but okay. And then...
I mean, and, you know, not that I really want to help these horrible monsters, but there are easier ways to kill a dog.
Let's not run through any of them. Now, the other thing...
I feel like the gremlins do all of them, like, to each other in due time.
Yeah, also, Mrs. Deagle threatens to put the dog in a dryer on spin cycle.
Like, so, what the hell was that about? Like, oh, we'll have the dog euthanized, and it's like better than what I would do to him. And why? For some reason, Billy asks, "What would you do to him?"
No, like, Billy, shut up.
It's like, yeah, I would kill your dog very slowly and painfully and put him in my dryer. It's like, whoa, hang on. Like this lady is a flat out serial killer or something.
Yeah, she's an awful human being. But anyway, they conspire to sabotage the clock so that they get the food before midnight. I don't know why they had a plate of fried chicken in the fridge. That was weird.
Fried chicken like that. You can't let that go to waste. The times are tight. It's Christmas. They don't have any money.
Yeah, but like just a plate sitting in there?
Well,
nothing on it? The saran wrap? Nothing?
Oh, well, they probably bought a bucket of chicken, and the bucket probably soaked through with grease, and they had to throw it out, so...
Some aluminum foil on it, or parchment paper, something?
What are we, the Rockefellers over here with our aluminum foil and our saran wrap?
I'm sorry. the father probably hasn't invented the Illuminator 5000.
It would be called the Peltzer Coverer or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Everything. I mean, he was really good at branding. I will give him that. Everything that he invented had a nice logo in the right corner and like a tasteful stripe around the side of it or whatever. Like he was very good with the branding, just not so much with the thing.
Yeah, yeah. And they go to do that, and the dad is meanwhile at some convention, thing. And what I found interesting about that is whenever we cut to him, we get Robbie the robot in the background, but one of the shots, the initial shots, shows you the H.G. Wells time machine.
Yes, I was wondering if you were going to point that out. It's just like in the background there's the time machine, like, okay.
Yeah, and then because he's complaining that things are a little more advanced at the convention than he thought, so his stuff seems a little less impressive, and that's why you get Robbie the robot saying his lines from Forbidden Planet, and you get the H.G. Wells time machine spinning in the background.
I love there's a dude sitting in the time machine too, and the disc is spinning. He's just sitting there like doo doo doo.
Well, did you notice when we cut back that the time machine is gone and there are people walking through the spot where it was, trying to looking at the ground, trying to figure out where it went?
No, I didn't notice that, but that's, of course, there is that.
Yes, yes.
I was just like, why is he sitting in this weird sort of like get smart phone booth kind of thing?
Yeah, it's very silly.
Is this what CES is like? I've never been to CES. Is this CES?
I don't know, but I'm assuming it was at least supposed to mimic some aspect of some other conventions like that.
Well, I guess there weren't really a ton of like mass market electronics, but they were like gadgets. So maybe it's like CGS, Consumer Gadget Show?
I suppose. Consumer Time Machine Show? Consumer Robot Show? But anyway, they...
I like his bathroom buddy, too. He's like...
Oh, I don't like the bathroom buddy.
Let's say you're running late for the big meeting, and you touch your face, and you realize, I didn't shave today. Now, the bathroom buddy can help you with that, too. And it's just like, great, you made a Swiss Army knife, and now there's a big razor on the side of it. That's not an invention. You just put two things together.
No, all of his inventions are awful, and his sales pitches are so painful. But they're supposed to be like he's supposed to be an unsuccessful inventor and an unsuccessful salesman, and he plays that part.
I like that he carries around his smokeless ashtray of the future in a bowling ball bag.
Well, what else are you gonna put in? It's round.
I guess. my word. There are so many like quirky. This is like, if Tim Burton had a baby with Wes Anderson, like, this is what this movie is. Like, it's so quirky and weird and so many different directions for no reason whatsoever that the story is almost completely lost in this thing. And it's like, You just gotta like enjoy being along for the ride, but then like these weird tonal shifts between like silly, funny, and cute little Gizmo driving this car around inside the toy store, and then just like the awful, horrible, casual murder. It's just like I don't think I feel good about watching this.
Yeah, it's certainly dark. But back to the thing, they eat the stuff, and then Billy and Gizmo go to sleep and wake up the next morning. And there are pods,
alien pods everywhere.
Yeah, very similar to what he was seeing depicted on the screen before he passed out, but also very similar to 1979, was it, Alien? The original Alien? So the alien pods also emit fog, which that should be a little trepidatious. So he goes downstairs, and he mentions this to his mother, who comes upstairs, and they both stare at it and go, oh well.
Don't forget, meanwhile over at the school, he took one of the clones there.
Oh, yeah.
And then made another clone for a teacher to like try and get some insight as to what these things are. And this is the scene that is entirely framed on their faces, and it's all done in sound design, so they don't have to like show too much of the puppet moving. But what is this history teacher doing? Like, he's experimenting on animals till 2 a.m. on his own free time. Wait, in the back of his classroom.
He wasn't a history teacher, he was like a biology teacher.
Well, whatever the hell he is, like, why is he on school grounds at 2 a.m. working in the dark on some strange alien animal that he didn't tell anybody about? And then like once his thing does a pod after it steals a sandwich and then it hatches, like he goes and makes a phone call about it hatching before he even bothers to like figure out where it went. Like, what are you doing, dude?
Yeah. And there are elements of Mr. Hansen and this alien and stuff that, not alien, but the egg, that should seem similar or at least a little to you if you've seen the most recent season of Stranger Things, because they cited Gremlins as an influence on the most recent season. Spoiler alert.
The teacher in Stranger Things is not an idiot.
No, he's clueless, though.
But he's smart, and he like helps move the plot along, as opposed to this guy who just like does some dumb crap and gets murdered.
Yeah.
But, I like the teacher in Stranger Things. He's funny.
Yeah, I mean, but he's also not particularly bright about figuring out that the kids are up to no good. Here he hides it underneath a box and stuff, and he's projecting a thing about rabbits and heartbeats, which is great. That's all good, because it allows us to have some heartbeat from the little guy inside the thing, and he hatches. When the teacher realizes that the thing is hatched and ushers everybody out of the room and then goes after it, it doesn't go well for him. For some reason, he's like, you know what? I'll put food in my hand and I'll put my hand underneath the table. And there's this part where it goes completely into shadow. That is going to be good.
Yeah.
Probably a good thing that I can't see my hand.
And this is, again, where the tone veers like back into like a Freddy Krueger or Jason movie. It's like, oh, I'm just going to casually stick my whole arm underneath this desk where there's some unknown monster running around here. Who knows what it looks like now?
Yeah, it's very John Carpenter.
This teacher is giving teachers a bad name. He's very dumb.
Yeah.
All he's doing is showing movies to his students and getting murdered.
But he's not in much more of the film because he's probably killed and then stabbed with the needle.
He gets a hypodermic needle in the butt. That's not really going to cause a lot of damage. I mean, it might give him a little bit of nerve damage. You want to avoid needles in the butt because there's a lot of nerves back there.
Yeah, it's mainly the part where he seemed to be completely incapacitated underneath the table.
Yeah, that too. And
then we don't see him again.
All the gremlins have very sharp claws too, so
yeah.
He probably got his throat slashed under the table or something.
Yeah.
Then, of course, when Billy sees that, he's just like, well, I'm going to leave this dead body here and not tell anybody. They'll have fun discovering that tomorrow morning when first period shows up for school.
Well, the ridiculous thing is that he calls his mother, warns her.
Get out of the house!
Yeah, but...
What does she do? She doesn't leave the house because there's a noise coming from the kitchen.
Well, she was already upstairs. But, But the really silly thing is that he makes that call to her, and then he doesn't want to go to the police. He wants to try to find the creature that may have murdered his teacher by himself, which is odd.
Well, so again, this is like all of their stupid trickery. Like, you hear a noise and then the camera tilts up to see a hole in the vent, and it's like, okay, you didn't actually do that. It was just in sound design. And then he goes to the nurse's station to put a bandage on his bloody hand, and then like a puppet sort of pops out of the cabinet but doesn't really pop out because there's an arm inside of it. And then like cut to him getting freaked out, and then another bang noise, and then the camera whips over and there's another hole in another AC vent. It's like, come on, guys. Like, you couldn't even put like a motion blurred puppet on a stick like jumping towards the hole. Like, yeah, it's boy. It's very obvious that there is nothing there.
Yes. But
I mean, for children though, children probably didn't know because this is a PG movie. Like, this is just for children, right? This movie is PG.
Apparently, this movie is one of the movies that influenced the creation of the PG-13 rating.
I feel like this movie is a hard PG-13, and like if they would have cut it like a little bit differently, it could have been R.
Yeah, this is true.
I feel like if some of these shots with the murder would have lingered a little bit longer, and like there was a little bit more blood like pooling out on the floor, this is easily an R movie.
Yeah, there is a lot of this that's actually relatively bloodless, considering the
murder. Well, I guess, yeah,
murder.
The gremlin that splats in the microwave, too, is kind of a green, so maybe they would have let that go away. But, like, when the mom is, like, ruthlessly stabbing that one on the counter, like, if there was, like, one insert close-up shot of this knife going into this gremlin, it's like, oh, yeah, there, now it's R.
Yeah, but also, it's not red, and rating systems only care if it's red. So that's why you make it other colors.
Mm-hmm.
Pro tip.
That's how Tarantino got his R rating for Kill Bill, whichever one, the one with where she cuts all the limbs off of all of the fellas in the club.
That was the first one. The good one.
That was the first one. Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, they were not going to give him an R rating, so he did that weird thing where she blinks and it goes black and white, so everyone's blood is black and white.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You can watch a special feature where it's all in color online somewhere. I watched that a couple of times when back in the day when I was doing all of my Kill Bill research for that very culturally accurate samurai TV commercial I did.
Is there a scrapbook? Did you do some planning?
We created a production bible for all of our a lookbook, as they call it.
Oh my god!
It's 300 pages. It's on my shelf. No, I'm kidding. I absolutely did none of these things.
Okay, good.
Because it's all in my head.
I can't. Yeah, but I can't tell with you because sometimes you do take your job very seriously in unexpected ways.
I mean, after I pitched the idea and then like gave a little bit of a background and then like got the song that I wanted to use, like I played the Kill Bill song and sort of like described it shot by shot as it was going, and I got like 110% buy off from the client. I was like, I'm not gonna go back and ask for permission for anything else. I'm just gonna make this thing and be like, this is what we talked about, and they were thrilled for some reason.
That's so interesting.
God, that's such a bad thing.
Oh, I mean, you got a free sword out of it. Which you cut yourself
with.
I did.
I got a free sword and a free scar out of it.
Yeah.
And I got a free story. Like, I describe it to people now and they're like, oh, I get it. That's pretty much the reaction when I describe it to people. They're like, oh, I get it. I'm like, it's not very deep. There were some weak pools and a strong pool and a sword.
And you were playing with your sword in your office?
Yeah, I was I was dabbling in some sword trickery. Not this is not historically accurate sword trickery, which is why I didn't make it into the final piece. No, this was a sword move that I saw in a movie that is not a sword move that one should attempt with a real sword.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, the sword's still behind me.
Have you picked it up since then, or are you scared of it?
I feel like I picked it up like once or twice after the production, but no, it's been it comes in like a little cloth sleeve thing, and it's been wrapped up for, I don't know, a year or whatever.
Yeah, respect the sword. So
I respect the sword by never looking at it or talking to it or addressing it.
You live by the sword, you get a scar by the sword. So the the thing with the movie. Things spiral out of control here because the mother has to puree one of them in the juice thing.
So brutal.
Yeah, and apparently it's one of the things Joe Dante keeps in his garage of props from his movies.
The juicer?
Yeah, he's very proud of it. But
see, I'm worried about Joe Dante now.
Now?
Yeah,
he seemed so well adjusted before.
Ay, ay, ay.
We had mentioned this before, but Joe Dante, I believe in our episode on the Burbs, Joe Dante has a attraction to really bizarre depictions of gruesome, violent, cartoonish things. And I say cartoonish and violent together because it's basically, if you think about some of the things that happen in Warner Brothers cartoons, where there are people being like smacked and mashed and tortured and maimed and stuff, but it's bloodless, so it winds up being fine. Just imagine that with blood now, and then also like shot photographically. That's sort of Joe Dante's aesthetic for how he likes to do things, and you see that on display in this film.
When does he do that in other stuff? Remind me.
Well, in Gremlins 2 is another example.
That Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, but also the dream sequence in The Burbs, where they're all murdering and stuff.
The head on the grill or whatever.
Yeah. And I think there's somebody who jumps through a wall in another Joe Dante film and they leave a cutout hole of themselves in it. Struggling to remember what it was.
Yeah, but then like when she kills a couple of them, and then there's the one that's got the mom like with a garrote wire of Christmas lights around the neck, and then he like comes in and grabs the sword that has been conspicuously falling off the wall for the entire first act, and then hacks the head off of the gremlin so hard that it flies into the fire.
Did you know that the gremlin was originally supposed to decapitate the mother and then roll her head down the stairs? In Christopher Columbus, his original version of this,
decapitate her like in the same way with like a rope like that.
I don't know if it was with a rope or with a sword, but decapitation featured in it because her head rolls down the stairs.
I'm not sure that would make me feel entirely different about this movie.
No, I think that would make it worse. What I like about one of the redeeming things about this is that the mother actually is capable of fending off many of these gremlins for herself by herself.
Yeah, I like that she was able to do that. But like, even if it was like a good fight and she got overwhelmed and decapitated, this movie is still like totally screwed.
Oh yeah, but what I mean is that I like that she's able to defend herself, and she is not merely a damsel in distress she just has to wait for Billy to come save her. She basically kills almost all of them by herself, with a couple exceptions. And then Billy shows up and takes her to the doctor's house, drops her off there for treatment, and then he goes off to do his own stuff. And we don't see her until the final scene after that. You know, I question the believability of a mother who would just be like, yeah, I'm just going to sit here. Not concerned about my son running around town with all these monsters.
All right. So if, in fact, it was the version where, and who knows, this may have been the real thing. If it was the real version where she was decapitated and then the rest of the series of events occurred as they had, the ending of the movie should have been this. It shouldn't have involved the fellow from Chinatown. It should have been Billy in his room with Gizmo, talking about how, you know, what a fine mess we've made here, and I love you, Gizmo, and we've become very close together, but I can't allow anything like this ever to happen again. So many people have lost their lives and so much havoc has been wreaked, and he puts a pillow over Gizmo's face and suffocates him to death and then fade to black. Like that would have been the ending to go along with the mom getting decapitated, because, you know, We gotta break the cycle. We gotta put an end to it. But some producer saw this and they're like, we can't do that. We gotta have a sequel. We gotta sell some more toys.
I mean, I don't know how heavily a sequel weighed in anyone's mind when they were making this, but...
But you can see that scene, right? Like a single tear streaming down Billy's face as he's like, as Gizmo with his cute little noises squirms under a pillow.
But that's not this movie though.
It's so close to this movie though.
But it isn't, because this movie also goes, ha ha ha, time for some yuck 'em ups, and that's this movie. It's not we're gonna end on a downer where someone was. Just put to sleep.
To modify that scene, Phoebe Cates is in the room with him, and she's very sad to see Gizmo go as well. And then at the end, they hug and they say, like, you know, how about that dinner I promised you? And they walk off into the sunset together.
This is not tonally better for me.
And then, out of a bush, like a single evil gremlin arm comes popping out, like, oh, one of them's not fully dead.
No. This is not a good, I don't know why you're trying to improve this with these suggestions.
These ideas are just as bad as the movie itself and could have avoided a sequel.
This all culminates in Stripe jumping into a pool at the YMCA, and then you get a bunch of lights and turbulence and cat meowing noises, I guess. And then he runs out of there just in time to save the budget from trying to show all those gremlins getting out of the pool. He goes to the police station and then very slowly and very patiently recaps the movie for the people in the police station.
As you know, cops,
I don't
know. Here is what has occurred.
I mean, I can understand why they wouldn't believe him and why he would need to explain these things, but as an audience member watching the film, I'm seeing something occur again that I don't need to see for any particular reason, other than it's supposedly give us enough buffer time to get from the YMCA to the bar, and also the destruction of Mrs. Deagle and the Futtermans.
Right, don't forget the go motion scene of all of the gremlins running down the street.
That was pretty good.
It was all right. it looked different.
For the era that it was in.
Yeah, I'm not in the mood to cut this movie a lot of slack.
Man, you're so crabby today.
Oh God, I've been up for so long.
Sleep deprived Dan, not in any mood for gremlins.
5:45 in the morning. I will have none of your nonsense, gremlins. Get a real job. Oh God. Anyway, so they run amok on the town, like they go to the movie theater and then they like destroy the movie theater, but at the same time they like leave one of the projectors functional enough to start playing some, what were they watching? They were,
Snow
like,
White.
Porky Pig. Oh, Snow White. Yeah, that's
yeah, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the Disney classic.
And they're all singing along, which I guess is like part, like a reference back to how Gizmo is kind of like musically inclined earlier in the movie when he's singing along to the keyboard.
Yeah, also, it's sort of a reference to how malevolent but goofy that these things are, because they're singing along to a movie.
Yeah, it's like if after one of Hitler's speeches, like all of the SS started doing like a flash mob dance or something. It's like, this is terrifying.
I don't know if I necessarily would have brought up any of those things that you just did, but
probably not a good idea. Again, sleep deprived.
The important thing.
Also, I watched that Oprah thing earlier today where it was they did all the flash mob stuff at the Black Eyed Peas concert, so that's why it's on my mind.
Watched it, or did you listen to the podcast?
I listened to the podcast and then I watched the clip because I was like, I got to see what this thing they're talking about here.
Yeah, it was a good podcast episode, I think. I saw the Merlin Mann had mentioned it, so I was like, I'll trust you, and I listened to it, but that's a good way to pivot away from the thing you had just brought up is with Oprah.
You want to go back to that?
No, I don't. So let's blow up this movie theater, and they got the idea to use the gas and then have a shirt that they light on fire and stuff underneath the door, and then it'll go off. But not before they walk past the thing when the reels are being changed and all the gremlins see them. And then you get an animated version of gremlin shadows coming up towards the projector screen.
It was okay. It was pretty clearly
animated.
Gremlins.
It was I would say the go motion scene was a little more believable than that one. So they break through the thing, but not before they get out of the building. Meanwhile, Stripe had gone to the lobby to get some snacks. Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, you would think that though, since he's like the head of the whole thing there, he would like send a lackey to go get him some candy.
Yeah, except he doesn't, because he knows that the building will blow up. So it's very important for him as a main character to leave the building.
Go break into the candy store across the street. And apparently, you know, when he was sniffing around and he could smell the candy from all the way across the street there, I was expecting him to go like sniff in the air and then smell Billy like traipsing around back there and then get suspicious or something, but no.
Yeah. It's just, you know, he was hungry, he wanted a snack. So breaks out of the movie theater, goes to the candy store, which is not a candy store as much as it is a department store with a candy window. Although it is not immediately clear that that's the situation from the start of that scene. And then they are celebrating the murder and destruction of the town's movie theater. Phoebe Cates turns over and sees the gremlin in the window eating candy and flags that to Billy. And they go over there.
Oh, now in my head I'm singing "How Much for That Gremlin in the Window."
the one with the murderous tail.
Oh God, that's good. Somebody put that together.
Mm-hmm. But they break the one window that has a light in it, which they could have broke the one that was next to it that didn't have a light in it, and then they wouldn't have to break the light.
I love that he pulls like one of those little like child's like vacuum bubbler toys out of the broken window and then uses that to smash the other window. It's like, oh my God, what are you doing? That's a small child's toy you're ruining right there.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised that the glass broke that easily, but they get in, and then they go after Stripe, and Phoebe Cates is put on the mission of going to go turn on the lights, and she's got Gizmo with her in the bag. She puts Gizmo down, Gizmo gets out, and Gizmo is determined to save the day somehow. And meanwhile, Billy is getting shot with a crossbow and maimed with claw marks. And
oh God, the crossbow in the arm is so bad. He's getting clawed, and there's a chainsaw, and he's like holding it up with the baseball bat. And it's like, what? This movie is suddenly very dark again.
Yes.
Oh God. And Phoebe Cates is just like completely inept. Like she's playing like audio clips through the speakers, and she's like,
what? This doesn't seem like anybody bothered to label any of the switches in there.
So just hit all of the switches. That's a good idea. And like, doesn't she hit like a wrong one at something that does something bad? I forgot. She's like throwing circuit breakers and stuff, and like trying to figure out what the hell to do, and it's all bad.
Yeah, but then she turns
on the fountain inadvertently.
Yeah, but she doesn't know that was bad. Also, even if the fountain was off, there'd still be water there. But I guess
because she doesn't even know the rules of the gremlins.
I guess there wasn't a scene where he explained it to her.
Yeah, no, yeah. At no point was she aware of that. I mean, she barely had enough time in the movie to go, like, what is that thing? Because she sits on Gizmo, he's like, don't worry, he's with me. And, like, if I was her, again, situational awareness, I'd be like, no, explain to me what that is that I just sat on that is with you and why all of these other things are running around out here.
Yeah, like I said, 99% less concerned than they should be. But the thing with that is he spends more time walking the policeman through the mechanics of this again than he does talking to the person he supposedly has romantic interest in who is supposed to be helping him.
Well, you don't want to seem like a dork to your crush. So
yeah, you want to look like a total nerd. You know all these rules about gremlins, nerd.
You have to roll a 20 before you can kill the gremlin. Oh God.
Is that a thing?
I tried to do a D&D thing. Is that a thing?
I understood your reference that you were making, but
nice. I didn't understand my own reference, so I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Well, you got to roll initiative, and then you roll to hit, and stuff.
Yeah, how much to roll to decapitate with a sword into the fire?
I don't know. There's a lot of things. Like, what kind of sword do you have? Does it have a +1 to gremlins?
It's a vanity broadsword.
Wow. I don't know that off the top of my head. I'll have to check with the dungeon master later.
Please, can you look that up in the guide or whatever?
Uh-huh.
I assume there's a guide of some sort.
Yes, the dungeon master's guide. What it's called.
Oh, God, how great would it have been if he, like, consulted a dungeon master's guide about killing? Oh, wait, now we're back at Stranger Things.
Yes, same thing.
Oh, he should have consulted and found, like, the nearest thing to a gremlin. Because, again, gremlin's a word.
Well, but also, gremlin, that came from the World War II, like, people thinking there were things inside their stuff. And mm-hmm. Roald Dahl actually had, like, a book about gremlins.
There's also that car.
Yes, the AMC Gremlin.
Mm-hmm. It was a very ugly car.
Yeah, I never saw one in person to this day. I haven't seen one. Oh. I use the present tense. I've never seen one in person.
Oh, wait, I'm thinking... I'm trying to remember if I had seen one in person. I know I've seen the Pinto in person. No, I think I have not seen a gremlin in person. Wasn't the gremlin the one that... the main character lady drove in the House on Haunted Hill remake?
That's a possibility.
What's that lady's name? I forget.
I didn't see that. But they go through the department store with the maiming and the shooting and the crossbows. And they...
I'm resisting the urge to do the Cosby voice.
Don't do it.
With the maiming and the shooting.
That's bad, Dan. So they get to the.
I didn't do the voice. I was just saying it.
You were like 2 seconds.
I was close.
So they went to the fountain, and Stripe has determined that he can stick his finger to the fountain, and he does that, and then
he's like, "Haha, I'm gonna create more of me, and there's nothing you can do about it.
I will slowly get back me now." And so. There's these little pulsating blobs that start erupting.
God, stop. From... You're making it worse.
So anyway, Merry Christmas, everyone.
Oh, God.
They have, for some reason, they choose now to dilate time that it takes forever for little gremlin to spawn based on water contact. Whereas earlier in the film, it was like, the second it happened, basically. So he's doing that. He's got his pistol. Gizmo slams over the thing with the little car he's in. It blows up in an explosion, which is, I don't know how that happened. And then he...
those early lithium-ion batteries were very volatile.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he pulls on the little pin that sends him up, and it unleashes the sunlight that's up above. And then... You watch as Stripe starts to decay, boil away, sort of get all sinewy and gross.
To bring it back around, he turns into a Nazi staring into the Ark of the Covenant.
I mean, I don't know how that brought anything around, but thank you for that reference.
Really, this is an Indiana Jones movie.
As you can tell from the radio DJ billboard at the beginning of the film.
Yeah, absolutely.
You remember the billboard?
Oh God, no, I don't.
Yeah,
I remember the radio DJ talking, doing his like, "Oh, everyone's calling in about these things. What's going on? What was that noise? Oh my God, there's a gremlin in my studio!" Like again,
yeah.
Maybe get off the air and deal with the situation, but no.
Yeah, you know the rockin' Rodney or rocking Rick or what was it?
I think it was a Rodney.
Yeah, rocking Rodney. So after the racist China scene. Racist Chinatown scene, they cut to the billboard right before you see Steven Spielberg's name, and it's a Indiana Jones style with the orange and yellow lettering that you see at the beginning of Temple of Doom up there for the DJ, and you hear his voice talking to you about the day, and then Christmas music, And then the opening
and
then, credits.
Then their whole choice to like start and end the movie with the voiceover of the dad, like, I got a story to tell you. It's like, no, don't do that. Stop breaking the fourth wall with the talking to the audience. That's not helpful.
Well, supposedly they cut more scenes or something, and so they got information from the narration instead.
I mean, first of all, if this movie is a story told by the dad, he wasn't even there for most of it.
Nope. But it's his fault, so I guess it's something you could do.
And then, like, you know, fade to black, fade up, the dad is sitting at the end of the bar drinking a sorrow's away, and that's how I lost my family. My wife was decapitated by a gremlin, and my son moved away because he hate me. It's like, sir, that didn't happen. We know you just got divorced and moved away. He's like, shut up, it was gremlins!
But I mean, if you have Hoyt Axton, you might as well have him do the voiceover, because, like, who wants to listen to Zach Galligan as the narrator for this?
I would like to see this movie reshot with Zach Galifianakis.
I don't.
I feel like it would be fun.
But anyway, that basically takes us to the part where we get one last scare, and the skeleton leaps out and melts.
Yeah, it's... It takes a long time to die in a pretty gross, gruesome way.
Yeah, but they kill
it. As much as a Muppet dying is gruesome and gross.
I don't think it's technically a Muppet.
Whatever.
But the
it
dad...
It is not Muppet brand trademarked Muppet.
The dad runs in with the dog. Because the dog was drawn to the broken candy store window and sniffed them out. And then the dad followed the dog. I missed the scene where he picked up the dog. Where did the dog... Because the dog just kind of disappeared and then came back at the end of the movie.
Hmm.
But anyway, they go back in there and they witness the death of the evil gremlin. And the dad's like, what's that? And it's like, it's your fault, Dad. And they get Gizmo out of there. And they're like, oh, yay, we survived murder and major property damage. And they go back home for Christmas.
And it really illustrates what you should really be thankful for around the holidays. It's not about possessions. It's about loved ones and respecting nature and, I don't know.
Responsibility,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Gotta be responsible and support your family, even though the lady who runs the bank but doesn't really work there is bad.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really a movie we can all relate to at the end of the day, right?
It's just like my life.
Yeah.
No.
I apply the teachings of Gremlins every day. I get up, I make some coffee, and then I think, what would Gremlins do? And then I apply that knowledge and that mentality to my day-to-day life.
Well. Anyway.
Aside from being formative for other filmmakers, this movie's kind of an abomination.
I mean, it's not, okay, here's the thing. I have complicated feelings because this is a bad film on like a scorecard sort of a thing. But there are elements of it which influenced other people, like you said, and there's also elements of it which have... left an impression on me in terms of the weird chaos and damage and awfulness of these cartoonish, buffoonish, evil things, and just watching the technical execution of those things unfold, as primitive as it might seem in our modern era, for the time it was made and the time that I would have watched this, it was a lot of work that people put into it.
But like in the way that Tarantino's movies were influenced by these like atrocious exploitation films of the 60s and 70s, like you can appreciate that one led to the other. But at the same time, you're like, I don't need to watch that other one really much. I got it once, maybe once every 20 years or so. Once every 30 years, you can watch it. But
well, the curse. It's a movie you can only watch once every 20 years. If you watch it more than that, then the movie multiplies. But the
and then it tries to decapitate you with some Christmas lights,
or I was gonna say just like the CD, the DVD spins out of the case
Oh, sure, that's better.
Yeah, just like in Hellraiser 3.
Is somebody killed by a CD in Hellraiser?
Oh my god, Dan. I don't know why I know more about these sorts of awful movies than you do, because I don't even like really awful, gruesome, like, B-movie, whatever level stuff. But you need to get out more.
Never my thing. I was never into horror. Like I missed the vast majority of like the Freddy Krueger, Jason stuff. Like all of that was just like not for me.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen most of those. But
I would tell you, Pumpkinhead is one of them, right? That's like one of the really bad ones.
That's a bad one, but it's also like a really serious bad one. I think this movie is more influential on things like Ghoulies or. You ever see Little Monsters?
Yes.
Also has Howie Mandel in it.
Oh, God, that movie. They had kind of those, like, creepy giant smiles on their face, too, didn't they?
Yeah, the bad guy, the boy, he had a head was a human child face, and that split open to reveal... Anyway.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Anyway, all I wanted to say was I had a pumpkin head hat when I was young. Do you want to guess why I had a pumpkin head? I've never seen the movie. You want to know why I had the hat?
Because you thought the hat looked cool?
Nope, I didn't buy it. It was a gift to me.
From your father? Mother?
No, I think it was like an aunt or something.
Okay. Somebody thought it looked cool. They didn't know what it meant, but they saw it at a store and they picked it up for you.
They had heard that I was a fan of Smashing Pumpkins and had forgotten the band name, and they were like, this is that band you like, right? And I'm like, I don't know what this is, but thank you, I appreciate the gesture.
Smashing Pumpkins.
Pumpkinhead, right? That's that band. No, it's not. I don't know what this is. Anyway.
Yeah, the Pumpkinhead movie is not very good. Lance Henriksen is in it. Stan Winston does the effects for it. But it's one of those things where it's like, oh, there's a thing and there's a curse and it's coming to get you. And it's like, ugh, again, again with the curses.
1988.
They did a Pumpkinhead 2, I think.
Ugh.
Yeah, but...
Oh, look at that. Look at this shot here. There's this big... That looks like a CG claw with a pointy finger poking into some woman's head.
Hmm.
Oh, dear. These screenshots are troubling. Was there a director's edition where they did like a CG monster? Because it looks like they comped it back over with the original.
Maybe you're looking at one of the sequels or something?
No, I'm looking at the images on Pumpkinhead 1988 on IMDb.
Weird.
It looks like bad CG.
Huh. Okay. Anyway.
Gremlins, you got any final thoughts on Gremlins?
I really don't. It is entertaining to me that this movie exists and that there are cultural references that can be made to it, but it has a lot of bad things in it. A lot of.
I wish Billy wasn't so bad. He is such a bad character.
Billy is just kind of bland. He doesn't really grow or change over time. He's just kind of always just kind of like, oh shucks.
He's just a potato who gets clawed and gets a present, a bad present that he doesn't treat responsibly, and then they take his present away.
Yeah. Well, you got to treat your presents responsibly.
Your gremlins demand RESPCT.
Find out what it means to me.
To multiply.
The end.
Gremlins.
Gremlins.
There's gremlins in the motor.
Foreign parts in my car.
Told you we should have bought a Zenith.
Oh, my God.
Okay, lay off the America First there, buddy. Am I right, everybody? Huh?
It's one of those things that's incredibly cringeworthy nowadays, because while you might have watched this movie during the Obama administration and been like, that guy's a little, you know, racist and old. Now you watch it and you're like, oh, you voted for him, didn't you?
Trump ruined Gremlins. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, not necessarily. I think
it's okay. You can say it. The audience knows.
I think it came pre-ruined.